Greetings, friends, and welcome to another hour of Merry Entertainment as we go back in time to Christmases of yore to hear amazing radio holiday classics. I'm your host, Corey Walker, and I invite you to join me around the fireplace while listening to the old parlor radio. Now, for many of us in North America, the Christmas season is characterized by white snow and cold temperatures. However, our first episode today is set in Africa, where Christmases are definitely not white. Tarzan had two different runs, the first in 1932 to 1936, and the second from 1951 to 1953. The first run featured serialized episodes of 15 minutes each, whereas the second run featured 30-minute episodes, with each episode being complete. In both series, the stories were based on the novel Tarzan and the Apes by Edgar Rice Burroughs. Today's episode is from that second run and stars Jack Moyles and Lamont Johnson. The title is Congo Christmas and was first heard in transcribed syndication on Thursday, December 20th, 1951. Let's celebrate Christmas with the King of the Jungle.
From the heart of the jungle comes a savage cry of victory. This is Tarzan, Lord of the Jungle. From the black core of dark Africa, land of enchantment, mystery, and violence, comes one of the most colorful figures of all time, transcribed from the immortal pen of Edgar Rice Burroughs. Tarzan, the bronzed white son of the jungle. And now, in the very words of Mr. Burroughs, the story of Congo Christmas.
The village of the Karmiki tribe consisted of a rambling collection of thatched huts. A lean-to where the women ground corn and cassava, a palaver house and other tribal buildings, and a spiked boma that enclosed the village in a vain attempt to keep out the terrors of the jungle. But one building in the Majee stood out from the others. It was of costly teak wood and mahogany. Its door was of burnished copper, and fierce guards stood at its entranceway. This was the temple of Miyomoko, moon god of the Karmiki. The single eye of the moon god, a priceless star sapphire in the center of its forehead, glowered malevolently in the near darkness of the jungle dusk as a handsome young warrior placed a sacrifice of wild fruit at the feet of his idol.
Great Miyomoko, forgive Kedi for what he has done. Kedi not know what he do to make moon god angry, but now he not catch fish in his nets. Animals not come to his traps. His cattle run away, and Kedi not find them. Why you are angry, great Miyomoko?
I will tell you why Miyomoko is angry, son of Kamiki.
Oh, the high priest.
Miyomoko is not angry with you, Kedi. He is angry with all of the Kamiki tribe. But because you are strongest and bravest of the young warriors, he has selected you to redeem the people of tribe.
That is why my cattle run away? Why I no catch fish or animals?
It was a sign so that you would know you were the Matule.
The chosen one? Chosen for what?
You know that Miyomoko has been the god of your people since the beginning of time.
The deal?
You know that many of your tribe have given their lives to protect the great star sapphire that is the eye of the moon god.
The deal?
That many, including the father, the grandfather, and the great-grandfather of Miyomoko's high priest, have died for the moon idol?
Yes, yes, I know all of this, high priest.
And yet, with each passing day, more people of tribe turn from Miyomoko and worship a false god.
You mean those who go to missionary?
Nidio, unless missionary is destroyed, unless people of Karmiki return to Miyomoko, fish will no longer come to our streams, our cattle will all disappear, our fields will be barren, and our children will die unborn.
But what is Kedi to do?
Tonight, when the moon is high, you, the chosen one, must go to the missionary building. You must find the man, Collier, and you must kill. I, High Priest of Miyomoko, have spoken.
On the opposite end of the village from the Temple of Miyamoko stood the small bamboo hut that housed the missionary school and church that the Reverend Andrew Collier had founded 3 years before. A distinct contrast to the imposing structure of the moon god, the fragile shelter was in a bad state of disrepair. The Reverend Collier had always meant to fix the roof and replace the siding, but other matters always seemed more important. Now, although the hour was close to midnight, he continued to work by the light of a flickering lantern. By his side, at a long table in what was ordinarily the classroom, stood Amma, a lovely native girl, who was his best pupil, his most devout convert.
You are almost finished, Reverend Collier.
Finished? I've hardly begun, Amma. I have another 200 Christmas presents to wrap.
200? But there are not half that many Christians in the entire village.
We'd be very poor Christians if we gave presents only to those who agreed with our beliefs. Would you hand that spool of ribbon over there? Thank you.
There are yet many days until Christmas. Why must all the packages be wrapped tonight?
You can never tell what might come up. Now, I don't want to have old Santa Claus come along and find me not ready. Scissors, please, Amma.
It will be a wonderful Christmas, even though there are so few of us Christians.
There are more than there were last year, Amma, and more last year than the year before that. We have much to be thankful for. I'm ready for the next toy.
Oh, look at this one. A tiny kibwa.
Yeah, it's a rather a cute little dog.
Yes.
But I'm afraid there won't be nearly enough toys to go around. I sent another letter to the Church Foundation, but they... Oh, well, they couldn't possibly have sent all the things I asked for.
You are sad, Reverend Collier?
Not exactly. But I keep remembering those Christmases at home. There was always snow on the ground.
Snow?
There was a window in the choir loft. That was before I was ordained, you see. At that time, I played the organ, led the choir. Well, before the services started, I used to look down at the people crossing the snowy field on their way to church. In the vestibule, they'd remove their overcoats and shake off the snow. And then the big doors at the back of the church would open and they'd start to pour in. That was my signal to begin. Usually on Christmas morning, the first hymn I played was, "Come All Ye Faithful." And they were faithful in those days, Amma. And as they entered the church, you could...
Someone comes late at night.
Come in. The door to the mission is never locked.
Oh, Kitty.
Amma, I not think I find you here so late.
I have been helping the Reverend tie Christmas packages.
You go now, Amma.
Why? Why have you come here, Kitty?
Kitty has business with Reverend Collier.
But you have always refused to come into the missionary, even when I begged you.
Well, you should have gone hours ago, Amma. Kitty has business with me. I'm happy. I've waited long for this day. Go on, ma.
As you say, Reverend. Good night. Good night, Kitty.
You look sorely troubled, Kitty. May I help you? You can speak freely. We're alone.
Nadeo, enemy of Miyamoko, great moon god of Kamiki. Now we are alone.
In just a moment, we'll return to our exciting story of Congo Christmas. Almost a year had passed since Tarzan had visited the village of the Karmiki. Now he was on his way back from the city of Omdurmara, and since the elephant trail he followed came within a few miles of the Karmiki kraal, he decided to renew old friendships. As he made his way easily through the dense jungle vegetation, Nakima, the tiny monkey who was his frequent companion, danced at his side, chattering happily. Suddenly, as Tarzan reached the entrance of the village, he stopped in his tracks. From the temple of Miyamoko came the frenzied chanting of the high priest and his acolytes, and the low beating of the Moti Nagoma, the drum of death. Tarzan rushed to the shrine of the moon god and attempted to enter, but the powerful hands of the temple guards reached out for him and massive bodies blocked his path.
The beating of the Moti Nagoma has been outlawed, and I demand to see your high priest at once.
Go back.
I do not wish to cause bloodshed, but unless you take your hands from me and step aside so that I can enter, I shall...
Pass!
Jumbo, high priest of Miyamoko.
Why do you come during ritual, Tarzan?
I was on my way to see Nagako, your chief, when I heard the sounds of the Moti Nagoma. Whose death are you plotting now?
We do not plot a death. This is but a vestige of an old custom.
A custom I know well.
Your chief has long kept himself neutral in the struggle between you and others who do not believe in your fanatic religion, but I am not neutral. Tell me whose death you plan.
You do not frighten me, Lord of the Jungle. Soon the people of Karmiki will return to the obedience of Miyomoko. As the moon god was in years gone by, so will it be again. And none will dare defy its power.
The missionary. It's his death you plan.
By this time he is already dead. You are too late to stem the will of Miyomoko.
With Nakima dodging his heels, Tarzan ran swiftly through the slumbering village. Ahead, he could see the light of a flickering lantern from inside the mission. Perhaps the life of its founder also flickered. Tarzan reached the ramshackle building at last, and he flung the door open wide.
Reverend Collier, you're all right.
Of course I'm all right. Come in. Close the door after you.
Well, if you're busy,
I... No, no, no. Keddie was just leaving.
Medeo was just leaving.
Keddie. So you were the Matula.
Yes.
Matula?
The chosen one. Chosen to kill an enemy of Miyomoko. Did your nerve fail you, Keddie, or did Reverend Kalia prove stronger than he looks?
Oh, you're mistaken, Tarzan. Keddie made no attempt upon my life. He came here to help me tie these Christmas packages.
Oh, and the razor-sharp kizu that lies on the ground, it was not meant as an instrument of death?
Keddie was merely using the knife to cut ribbons. I want you to leave now, Keddie. Neither of us will say anything about this to anyone.
Santa, Reverend Collier, and good night. Good night, Tarzan.
You're making a mistake, Reverend. Keddie failed once, but the fanatical followers of Miyomoko will soon bolster his wavering spirits, and even should he fail again, there are others to take his place. We must go to Nagako. He's a just chief, and he'll put new restrictions upon the high priest, and he'll punish Keddie.
Punishment will not help him. He's deeply troubled and needs help. I failed in my effort to find out the source of his trouble. But I can never succeed in my mission until I understand the Kamiki and their problems.
I will spend tomorrow watching Keddie. I'll try to uncover the source of his trouble, and I'll keep him from making another attempt on your life. But you must keep a sharp lookout for others. Death might come from any direction and at any moment.
All the next day, Tarzan shadowed Keddie. It seemed amazing that the youth was unaware of his presence, for Nakima, who clung to Tarzan's shoulder, chattered shrilly. But Keddie was lost in a world of his own. At that moment, he was tending his small flock of sheep, but he was so absorbed in thought that a tiny lamb wandered off unnoticed. And as the lamb reached the fringe of the jungle, Numa the lion drew close, attracted by the scent of a tasty morsel. The lamb stumbled uncertainly, its tiny ears raised in frightened query. It turned to rejoin its flock. But now the lion crouched low, powerful muscles flexed, and the king of beasts leaped toward its helpless prey. But at that exact moment, a bronzed white savage catapulted from the trees, and a shaft of gleaming steel found its mark.
My lamb. My lamb, Tarzan. Keddie's little lamb wandered off. Where is...
Your lamb is safe through no fault of your own, Keddie.
Not Keddie's fault. His sheep, cattle wander off and cannot be found. Fish not bite on his line or enter his traps. Animals not caught by his snares. Is because Miyomoko is angry. Keddie is bewitched.
Keddie, I've been following you all day, and I can tell you why these misfortunes befall you.
Why?
Because you have no time to properly tend your nets or your traps. I watched you spend the entire morning peering through the window of the mission. I saw you stand for hours this afternoon near the hut where the women bake bread. And I observed you following the maidens when they went to the stream to fetch water.
Tarzan saw Keddie do these things?
I did. Keddie, you're so busy trying to catch glimpses of that girl, Amma, that you have no time for the other matters. When she's not within sight, you're busy dreaming of her. Naturally, your cattle and your sheep wander off unnoticed. The serious malady from which you suffer is known as love.
It's true. That is Keddie's great trouble.
Trouble? Well, if you're in love with Amma, why do you not ask to make marriage with her? Although you've lost some of your possessions, you surely have enough left for the marriage price.
Nadeo, have marriage price, but Amma not marry me.
She doesn't return your love?
It's not that.
Her family doesn't think you would make a good husband?
Family of Amma think well of Keddie.
Well, then, what in the world is it?
Amma is Christian. I am what she called pagan. Reverend Collier says she cannot marry me. High priest of Miyomoko say I cannot marry her.
Oh, so that's the root of all the trouble. Keddy, gather your flock and return to the village. Before another day has passed, I'll arrange a meeting between Reverend Collier and the High Priest of the Moon God. Perhaps I can solve your problems.
I, the High Priest of Miyamoko, will not leave the temple to visit the intruder.
The Reverend Collier has agreed to come here to discuss the matter.
He may enter, but only in the custody of four of my strongest guards.
You are to be alone in the temple when he comes. The guards and the other priests and the sentries are to be removed. You're to meet as equals.
And why should I agree to such ridiculous conditions?
Because your chief, the mighty Nagako, knows nothing of your instructions to Keddy. Unless you agree to the meeting as I have outlined it, you'll be told. Nagako has no patience with plans for murder, and you shall feel the fury of his anger and the power of his authority.
I agree to your terms. Tell the Reverend Collier to enter the temple when the hour of midnight has come again. And so, in the dead of night, the missionary met with the high priest, and they discussed earnestly the love of a pagan youth and a Christian maiden. 100 yards from the temple, the people of Karmiki stood motionless, intent. The temple guard stood in readiness, and Tarzan near them watched anxiously. Even Nakima seemed filled with the importance of the moment. He dashed off frequently, and then returned to whimper at the feet of his master. After what seemed like hours of endless waiting, the Reverend Collier came down the temple steps. Amma and Keddy rushed toward him.
Oh, Reverend Collier, you are safe.
Of course I'm safe, Amma. We had a most friendly discussion of your problem.
And the decision. The decision, Reverend Collier.
Well, I gave ground and the high priest gave ground, though he was forced to consult many scrolls and sacred records.
Yes?
Finally, we arrived at a compromise. You are to study the teachings of Mimoko for 3 days. And Keddy is to study the word of Jesus. 3 days is not much time to observe a religion. But at the end of that time...
Stop, thief! Do not let him get away!
Stop, what thief? What are you talking about, High Priest?
Several times while we spoke, I left the Reverend Collier alone. And when he was gone, I found that it was missing. The great star sapphire. The eye of Miyamoku.
But I stole nothing.
He would not steal. He is good.
This is some plot of yours. You pretended to make a reasonable agreement and then...
There is no agreement. There never will be. The man Collier has defiled our god. Your threats to tell the chief of my plans do not frighten me, Tarzan. Let him know. Let everyone know that I, the high priest of Miyamoku, will have revenge. Every Christian in the village shall be killed, and the man Collier shall be first.
In just a moment, the strange conclusion of Congo Christmas. The anger of the high priest had reached the point of hysteria, and now the disciples of Miyamoko surged forward to overpower the missionary. But in the instant of the attack, the pitifully few members of the cleric's parish formed a protective circle about him. The tiny band wavered before the savage onslaught of the multitude, but in that moment, Tarzan jumped to the steps of the temple. In his hand, he held his great bow, and at his side hung a quiver filled with metal-tipped arrows.
The first one who places a hand on Reverend Collier will get an arrow through his heart.
Do not hold back, disciples of Miyamoko. Collier must be killed.
No one be killed.
Great Chief Nagako,
your high priest has accused the Reverend Collier of stealing the star sapphire of the moon god. It must be plain to you that he could be guilty of no such crime.
What is true can be proved. Search him.
Oh, he is a holy man. You cannot believe
it. It's all right, Alma. I've been accused of a theft, and it's only right that I should be searched. As a matter of fact, I insist on it.
I search you, Collier.
Chief Nagako, I'm sure the missionary did not steal the gem, and since no one else entered or left the temple, it's plain that this is only a plot to discredit him and the work he's done among your people for 3 years.
No one guilty until proved so. No one innocent until trial has been held. Well, High Priest?
The eye of Miyamoko is not on him. He has passed it to someone else. I know he is guilty.
Tomorrow, when dawn has come, we hold trial. Nagako, chief of all Kamiki, has spoken.
Why do you not invite me inside the mission, Reverend Collier?
We can talk out here.
There's much talk among the natives. Although the High Council did not find you guilty, there are those who insist now that you are concealing something.
Why?
Oh, surely you're not that blind, Reverend. This morning a large safari arrived with many packages for you, and one crate so large that it took two elephants to carry. You've taken these things inside, and the door has remained closed. Can't you see that you're inviting suspicion?
Perhaps.
Perhaps. Even Chief Nagako is beginning to believe that you stole the sapphire in order to pay for these goods you had delivered. I ask you to tell me what the crates contained.
Well, it would be easy for you to climb to that tree over there and look down into the mission. The roof's still open in many places.
I will not look in without your invitation, and Nagako has forbidden the others to do so. But even my friendship and the spirit of justice that Nagako holds dear will not prevail long against the growing temper of the Karmiki.
Tarzan, for 3 years I've taught the unvarnished principles of Christianity. It's not enough. If I'm to succeed, I must match the colorful ceremonies of the native rites. These people will not accept the word of the Bible for miracles. They must see them with their own eyes.
And you intend to perform a miracle?
No, that I cannot do. But I'm inviting every member of the tribe to come here tomorrow. Perhaps on Christmas Day I can reveal something here that they will accept as a miracle. It's my only chance for personal safety, so that I may continue to fight for a cause that I know is right.
It's late, Keddy. You'd best go to Yahima. Perhaps in the morning we can try to straighten things out.
Is no way straighten. Now Keddy won't be Christian. But high priest say never let Keddy go. Puts curse on marriage.
Well, things may look different by tomorrow, Keddy. Tomorrow's Christmas, and I have a feeling things are going to happen.
Keddy cannot wait long. Inside is sick. His heart...
Shh, someone coming.
I go. But try help poor Keddy. Be well, Tarzan.
Go well, Keddy. Quiet, Nakima. The hour is late. Who is it?
You are alone.
Except for Nakima, my small monkey. Who comes?
It is I.
The high priest of Miyomoko. Come to call on me in a simple hut?
No longer am I proud and haughty, Tarzan.
What?
My father and my father's father and his father protected the priceless eye of Miyomoko. They gave their lives that the honor of the moon idol should not be blemished. But I have failed. Would that I were dead.
Your death would not solve the mystery.
If only some miracle would return the eye of the moon god. Tarzan, you must help me.
Perhaps if you were to speak with Reverend Collier, he could help you. He studied a great deal about the miracles of the past.
If only he could perform some miracle for me, I would be his friend. No longer would I oppose his ways. If only he could perform a miracle that would restore the sapphire, the honor of Miyomoko would be saved.
I know no more about the location of the missing gem than you do. And I'm reasonably certain Reverend Collier doesn't either, but he hints at a miracle that is to happen tomorrow. I suggest that you come to his Christmas party.
Christmas in the Congo. The dawn came early and the sun was strong. But even before the daylight had come, the entire village had gathered outside of the tiny mission. Inside, the Reverend Collier peered out nervously. The church foundation had been generous beyond his fondest dreams, but everything they'd sent him might be in vain. Now, as he nodded to Amma, the doors and the windows were thrown open. In front of the strange-tempered crowd, he could see the high priest, Tarzan, Nagako, the aging chief, Keddy, and the others. They watched him intently as he sat down before a huge box-like structure, a strange affair that had required two elephants to carry. And then, as he'd done so long ago, on those Christmases before he'd been ordained, the man Collier set to his task.
Of moon god fall from heavens.
Oh, from nowhere. Miracle. Right at the feet of the high priest.
Miracle.
It is a miracle.
Miracle.
The eye of the moon god dropped from the heaven at the sound of your magic.
This is a miracle. One I didn't plan.
We are friends now, Reverend Collier. Please make more magic with the box that plays music. Perhaps it will bring a charm upon the Christmas wedding.
Amma, did you hear that?
Yes, Kitty, I heard.
Let us walk short distance way, Tarzan.
All right, Nagako.
I am old, Tarzan. Soon I will go to long sleep. I would like to know how miracle happened.
I do not pretend to understand miracles, Great Chief. But now that I look back, the only one who could have slipped into the temple and stolen the jewel was my tiny monkey, Nakima. It's also possible that he hid it in the one place that your people were told to stay away from, the roof of the mission house.
Ah, Mateo, it could be as you say.
And of course, the roof has many holes, and the vibrations of the organ might easily have shaken it loose. But then, maybe we could be wrong. Perhaps it was a miracle.
All of us connected with the production of Tarzan join in wishing you a very happy Christmas. And we invite you to remain for a preview of our next story. Tarzan deserts his jungle to confront the complex maze of a modern city when he travels to Johannesburg. And there, in a world so alien to his own, he meets an enemy more dangerous than the savage beasts of the primordial forest, more ruthless than the jungle-crazed men he's encountered in the past, more destructive than the angry elements of the Congo. Tarzan fights an unseen adversary in the Hand of Death.
Included in our cast were Jack Moyles, Gigi Pearson, Bob Bruce, and Charlie Lung. Tarzan, a transcribed creation of the famous Edgar Rice Burroughs, is produced by Walter White, Jr., prepared for radio by Bud Lesser, with original music by Albert Glasser. This is a Commodore production. Listen to our next story, The Hand of Death, another thrilling episode of The Lord of the Jungle.
Well, what a beautiful ending to this story. I don't know about you, but I think an ending of true love conquering all is a perfect ending to a Christmas story. You're listening to the Tarzan episode Congo Christmas, starring Jack Moyles, along with Lamont Johnson in the role of Tarzan, King of the Jungle. The story was first heard in transcribed syndication on Thursday, December 20th, 1951. Next up is a holiday-themed episode of Our Miss Brooks. I've been dying to play a Christmas episode from this series, and that day has finally arrived. Our Miss Brooks is one of my favorite series, and is also a favorite of former Old Part of Radio host Lauren Fevens, who used to feature this series regularly. The series ran from July 19, 1948, till July 7, 1957, all on CBS. Eve Arden stars Connie Brooks, the title character, who teaches English at Madison High School, and Gail Gordon stars Osgood Conklin, the principal of Madison High School, as sort of nemesis to Miss Brooks. Other series stars include Richard Crenna as student Walter Denon, and Jeff Chandler as Philip Boynton, biology teacher and apple of Miss Brooks' eye. Today's episode is titled Magic Christmas Tree and was first heard at 9 p.m. on Sunday, December 19, 1948 on CBS Radio. Let's visit Madison High and see what everybody is up to.
Our Miss Brooks. Yes, it's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks under the direction of Al Lewis. Well, many of us are spending this Christmas Eve with our families and friends. But our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, isn't quite so fortunate.
No, my family was too far away to visit, and it seems my friends had other plans. But I made up my mind not to brood about it, and I was trimming a rather tiny tree in our living room when Mrs. Davis, my landlady, joined me.
That's quite a nice Christmas tree, Connie.
It isn't really a Christmas tree, Mrs. Davis. It's called a friendship tree. You see, I trim it by putting all my greeting cards on the branches with strips of cellophane tape. Looks nice, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. You certainly received some pretty cards this year.
And the sentiments are so lovely. Look at this one I got from my principal.
Mr. Conklin, what does it say, dear?
It's very heartwarming, Mrs. Davis. It says, to Miss Brooks, may the coming year bring you much more efficiency in your work. Signed, O. Conklin.
Oh, I can hardly believe it's Christmas time again. What happy memories I have of the earlier Christmases. There was one I'll never forget. I was just 8 years old, and when I tiptoed into the living room, there was my father standing by the tree. The minute he saw me, his eyes crinkled up, and he started to laugh so that his big white beard and his huge paunch just shook with glee.
Your father was made up as Santa Claus?
No, he always looked that way. Get back to the present, Connie. I'd love to stay here and celebrate Christmas Eve with you, but I promised my sister Angela I'd come over to her place. You remember Angela, the absent-minded one.
Oh, certainly, Mrs. Davis.
She always got a big thrill out of the holidays, too, even when we were girls. Of course, the poor dear could never remember when it was actually Christmas. And one Christmas day, she did the funniest thing.
What was that, Mrs. Davis?
What's what, dear?
What did Angela do?
Angela?
Your sister.
My sister.
The absent-minded one. What did she do?
Well, I haven't spoken to Angela in some time. What has she been up to?
I wish I knew. Maybe I can refresh your memory. Christmas morning, Angela did the funniest thing.
Christmas morning isn't until tomorrow, Connie. You must be confused.
Well, don't worry about it. I only get these spells once in a while.
Well, you shouldn't let it go, Connie. If you don't mind my offering a little advice, I'd like to suggest that you train your mind to concentrate more.
I'll do it, Mrs. Davis.
Now then, I've developed a little scheme which works wonders for me. Supposing you have trouble remembering where you put things around the house. Well, you just keep repeating the location to yourself with a sort of rhythm. For example, I just chant to myself, the mustard's in the closet, the bread is in the box. The mustard's in the closet, the bread is in the box. Now, isn't that simple? Mustard's in the closet, bread.
Wonderful, Mrs. Davis. If anybody wants a mustard sandwich, you're really ready.
Yes. Now, before I do anything else, I want to invite you to join me tonight.
Join you?
Yes, dear. I'm going over to...
Angela's house.
Oh, yes, that's right. Oh, she's so cute with that little absent mind of hers. Why, sometimes she forgets what she was talking about right in the middle of a... Oh, dear me, I hope there's enough milk for the cat.
Well, I'm sure if we... But then maybe someday. Or if it doesn't seem to. And that's why I can't join you tonight. But thanks anyway, Mrs. Davis. I'll just spend a quiet evening at home here.
But how about Mr. Boynton? Don't tell me he was too shy to ask you for a date on Christmas Eve.
Why do you think there's mistletoe on all four walls? No, Mr. Boynton asked me all right, but then he canceled yesterday. Said he's going upstate to visit his folks for a couple of days. But don't worry about me, Mrs. Davis. I'll have a gay time. I'll listen to the radio, read, and from this window I can see our neighbor's television antenna.
But what about the little gifts you got for Walter Denton and Mr. and Mrs. Conklin and Harriet? When are you going to deliver them?
They told me not to bother. They said we'd exchange on the 26th.
The 26th? But I don't think the day after Christmas is the time to exchange gifts.
You don't? You should see the department stores. Meow. What's that, Mrs. Davis?
Oh, it's Minerva. Where are you, dear?
By the tree. Heel Rover, a Minerva.
Isn't it the strangest thing how she bites at the pine needles? I guess the rosin in them appeals to her. I swear she likes the taste of it.
I guess to her, it's like a Tom and Jerry. Or rather, a Minnie and a Mickey. Come here, Minerva. We might as well get friendly. We're going to spend the evening together.
Well, I'll be running along now, dear. I hope you won't feel too lonely.
I'll be fine, Mrs. Davis. After all, I do have an imagination. I'll hang up my stocking in a little while. Then, when I'm pretending I'm asleep, I'll sneak in and fill it. Before you know it, it'll be midnight.
Midnight of Christmas Eve.
I can just picture it. A short, thin man in a black suit comes sliding down the chimney with an empty bag. St. Penniless, the schoolteacher, Santa Claus.
Well, at least you're not bitter. Now, Connie, about my sister,
Angela.
Thank you, dear. About my sister Angela.
Yeah?
Good night, Dorothy.
Good night, Bernice. Oh, stop drinking those pine needles, Minerva. Come over here. That's a good kitty. Now, I'll just settle down in Mrs. Davis's rocker, and we'll have ourselves a nice, quiet rock. I've got to exercise more. My bones are rusting. Oh, it's the rocker. It's kind of soothing, is that? You seem contented enough, Minerva. It was the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. Sorry, Minerva. I didn't mean to catch you. Oh, gosh, I'm sleepy. Now, who can that be? Expecting anyone, Minerva? That's funny. Nobody's here.
I'm here.
Where? Oh, leaning on my knee. What can I do for you?
I'm a salesman, but I don't believe in giving any sales talk or sob stories. All I do is tell you what I'm selling. And if you want to buy, okay. If not, okay.
Okay, what are you selling?
Well, it's Christmas Eve. I'm just a small urchin, a little on the underprivileged side. I'm trying to make a few dollars to get some wood to heat our tiny apartment. So while she's singing to my three sick sisters, my mother's lips don't turn blue.
That's what I like, no sob stories. If you're selling handkerchiefs, I'll take six.
No, ma'am, I'm selling Christmas trees. They're only a dollar a piece.
Oh, I've already got a tree.
Then I'll make it 50 cents.
But I don't need
a
tree.
How about a quarter?
Look, little boy.
I can arrange payments. Please take one, ma'am. These aren't ordinary trees, you know. They're magic.
Magic?
Yes, ma'am. You'd be surprised what miracles will happen if you buy one.
Well, a quarter isn't too much to pay for a miracle.
It's 50 cents.
I thought you said 25.
That's when you sounded tougher to sell.
Oh. Well, before I melt down to my coal buttons and the stovepipe hat, here's 50 cents.
You won't be sorry, ma'am. Here's a little tree.
Say, it's kind of cute at that. Would you like to come in and help me set it up?
Oh, I can't. I gotta get right home. My sitter's been alone long enough.
Sitter? What about your mother and the firewood?
That's just a routine. My folks are attending a dinner the other bank presidents are giving for father.
With the pitch you've got, you'll have your own bank by the time you're 12.
Thanks a lot. Good night, lady. And Merry Christmas.
Same to you, you little underprivileged millionaire. I'll put this tree over here. Maybe we can find some extra trimmings for it in the morning. Minerva, will you stop gnawing on those pine needles? I wish I knew what made them so appetizing to us.
Yeah. Oh.
Now, you come here and let those things alone. There we are. Well, I guess I'm not the only one that's spending Christmas Eve alone without family or friends. But who can tell? Maybe Santa Claus has something up his big red sleeve that I don't even know about yet. Of course, I do have a squeaky rocker and Minerva. Jingle bells, jingle bells, merry, stuff like that. Oh, what fun it is to rock with a big, fat, drunken cat. As I sat in the living room Christmas Eve with Minerva the cat on my lap, I couldn't help noticing that the tree which I'd bought from that wealthy urchin had a rather peculiar luminosity. Although there wasn't any artificial illumination, it seemed to glow from deep down in its branches. As I rocked back and forth, I started to get very drowsy. Ooh, little boy said this tree was magic, Minerva. I don't believe it either. Still, it is Christmas Eve. Some very strange things have happened on Christmas Eve. Huh? What's that? Oh, I must have been dozing. Coming! Well, it's Walter Denton. Come in, Walter.
Noel, Noel, Joy, you've no rail.
Gracias. Come on into the living room, Walter.
Thanks, Miss Brooks. Here, I brought you this little gift to put under your tree.
Oh, that was very thoughtful, Walter. Put it under this tree over here.
Okay. Say, you got two trees, haven't you?
Yes, one for Minerva and one for me.
Meow. What?
Don't pay any attention to her. She's pine needle happy.
Well, Miss Brooks, as you know, I was supposed to spend the evening nestled snugly in the tight little confines of my own small immediate family circle.
For heaven's sakes, come out of there. You're giving me claustrophobia.
But I went to my father and mother and craved their permission.
Wait a minute, Walter. You craved their permission?
Yeah. Crave, craven, crave, isn't it?
Of course not. Crave, crave. Let's see. Crave, craven. After you crowed their permission, what?
Well, they waived my presence for a long enough while for me to deliver to you, Miss Brooks, the little token of my esteem and affection, which is now ensconcing under the tree.
Walter, are you still in my English class?
Sure, Miss Brooks.
Well, I'd better bone up a little. One of us is going to flunk this term.
Miss Brooks, is something that I've wanted to say for a long time.
Yes, Walter?
It's a little on the sentimental side, perhaps, for a so-called pep high school boy to be telling the teacher, but it's sincere, Miss Brooks.
I'm sure it is.
It's something I feel deep down inside of me, Miss Brooks, from whence so many of one's warmer emotions stem.
That's whence they stem from, all right.
Of course, even if it does seem over-sentimental or even downright sticky, Christmas Eve seems to be the time you can say things like this and not sound over-sentimental or sticky.
Christmas Eve is the time to say them. I just hope I hear them by New Year's Eve.
What I want you to know, Miss Brooks, is that I'm grateful.
For what?
For my association with you during the past semester at Madison High School.
Well, thank you, Walter. I've tried to be a capable teacher.
Oh, your teaching was nothing. I don't mean scholastically. As a teacher, you were very adequate. No, I mean personally. The interest you took in me and my problems. For that, I could never thank you if I lived to be 100. Of course, you'd be gone a long time by then.
To you, too.
You don't know what it's meant to me to have your ear whenever I needed it.
It was nothing, really. I have another one.
Especially about girls. Gosh, remember how silly I used to act about girls? Every time one of them looked at me, I giggled like a kid. And then, overnight, I matured. I met the one woman who mattered. Harriet Conklin.
But something.
And you saw
saw me through the difficult transition period of Vatimur as well, while Harriet and I were adjusting to one another. It was wonderful to be able to come to you for advice, Miss Brooks. It isn't every boy who has such an interest taken in him by some intelligent, elderly person.
Give me back my ear. I can't hear you.
It's not that you're ancient or anything. Gosh, I've seen girls who don't look as good as you do.
Girls? What do you think I am?
Yeah.
Shut up, Minerva.
By the way, Miss Brooks, I see you got lots of mistletoe on the walls. Were you expecting Mr. Boynton tonight?
Yes, Walter, I was. We were going for a wheelchair ride together. But he had to visit his folks upstate.
His folks? Gosh, they must be well along in years.
His father's over 50. They may shoot him next spring. Look, Walter, while you're here, you might as well pick up the little gift I got for you.
Oh, but you shouldn't have, Miss Brooks. Where is it?
Under the tree on your right. It isn't much, just a remembrance.
Oh, gee, I almost forgot. I can't open it yet.
Why not? Oh, you mean you want to put it under your tree at home and open it with your family?
Well, not exactly, but I'll get it later, Miss Brooks. There they are now. I'll answer it.
There who are now?
Come on in, folks. She was all alone when I got here.
It's really a surprise, isn't it?
We should have stayed home Christmas Eve. Besides, it's freezing out.
Now, Osgood, don't be so grouchy.
Hello, Miss Brooks. Merry Christmas. Why, it's Mr. and Mrs. Conklin and Harriet. How are you all?
I'm cold.
Oh, that's too bad. Come here, Minerva. Rub up against Mr. Conklin.
Meow! What's that? What's that? Go away, cat.
She seems to like you, Osgood. Or is she hungry, Miss Brooks?
She's not that hungry.
I don't like cats. Why doesn't she go chase a mouse or something?
You forget, Mr. Conklin. This is Christmas Eve. There isn't one stirring.
Say, Harriet.
Yes, Walter?
There's a lot of mistletoe around this room.
I know. It's real pretty.
Osgood, notice all the mistletoe in this room.
What? Oh, that green stuff. More often than not, it makes me sneeze.
Oh, come on, Osgood. Let's see if it does.
Oh, now, Martha, don't embarrass me. I don't
it
like the...
It doesn't make you sneeze, does it, Harriet?
I'm willing to find out. Here's a nice wreath of it on this wall.
Yeah. Well, here we are.
Yes, here we are.
If it's all right with Harriet, it's all right with us.
Oh, come on, Walter. We're getting old.
Oh, gosh, you're sweet, Harriet.
Isn't that cute, Osgood? Oh, come here, dear. How about one for your faithful old wife?
Well, it is customary, I guess. There, I'm under the stuff.
Now, fuck her up, dear.
Very well, very well. You see, I told you. Stop this romantic dribble and act like adult human beings. Miss Brooks, I'd like to take advantage of this visit to inquire as to your plans for the coming year's classwork. Do you have your schedule all laid out?
Frankly, Mr. Conklin, I haven't had much chance to work on anything. You
haven't had much of a chance, but you've been away from school all week. Your vacation started last Monday.
I know, Mr. Conklin, and that's what I took the week as. I mean, a vacation is something you go on when you get the opportunity to. You don't work on it or during it, unless, even though I didn't actually go anywhere, when my vacation came along, I went on it, or was on one, usually.
And you wanted to be the head of the English department.
Please, Osgood, this is no time to talk of school affairs. We're here to spend part of our holiday with Miss Brooks.
It was very nice of you to think about me, Mrs. Conklin. It was nice of all of you. I want to... Where are Walter and Harriet?
Denton, get my daughter away from that mistletoe at once.
Why, Mr. Conklin, Harriet isn't allergic to mistletoe.
No, but I'm allergic to you.
Harriet's almost irresistible sometimes, especially alongside of older women like Mrs. Conklin and Miss Brooks.
Sounds like the bell. I'll get it. Why, Mr. Boynton, come in.
Good
thanks, Miss Brooks.
But I thought you were going upstate to see your folks.
I was, but they sent me a wire that they wanted to come here for about a week or so. They'll arrive in the morning, so I thought I'd drop this little gift off for you tonight.
Oh, but you shouldn't have. Where is it? Let's just put it under the tree in the living room. Look who's here, everybody.
Well, it's Mr. Boynton.
Hi there, Mr. B. This is nice.
Hello, Boynton. Pretty cold out, isn't it?
This is beginning to get more like Christmas Eve every minute. Sit down, Mr. Boynton. I'm certainly glad your folks decided to visit you instead of vice versa.
So am I. There's a particularly good reason why I'm glad.
There is?
Yes. It gives me a chance to see how my guinea pigs are affected by this cold snap. They haven't reacted at all.
What do you expect them to do? Blow on their paws?
Look. Have you pointed out the mistletoe to Mr. Boynton?
Oh, why don't you stop that nonsense, Martha?
It isn't nonsense. Mr. Boynton, look at the mistletoe.
Mistletoe? Oh, yes. A very interesting example of the flora found in various areas throughout the globe. An evergreen parasitic shrub, it is indigenous to the regions where apple trees and oaks abound.
Now that the lecture is over, may we ask questions?
Certainly, Miss Brooks.
Want to stand under it?
Stand under it? Well, you see, because of certain characteristics in its makeup, an allergy is sometimes aggravated by its presence.
I'll take a chance if you will.
Come on, Mr. Boynton.
Yeah, come on, Mr. Boynton.
Just bring him over to this wall here.
Well, I'll get under it if you like.
Well, don't just stand there. Can't you see Miss Brooks is cooking?
Well, don't fuss for me. I couldn't eat a thing.
Under the mistletoe signifies?
Well, I know what it signifies to most people, but to me, it's
Well, there goes 85 cents worth of mistletoe.
I know what let's do. Let's open up the presents right now.
Wow.
Splendid suggestion, Walter.
Shouldn't we wait until just before we leave? Might be less embarrassing that way.
Well, if you want to open them now.
Golly, this one tree's pretty crowded. I'll put some of these packages under this little one over here.
Oh, look out, Walter. You're bumping into one of the branches. Look out!
Gosh, I got the funniest feeling when I touched that branch.
What kind of a feeling, Walter?
Well, you're Harriet Conklin, aren't you?
Well, sure I'm Harriet Conklin. Walter, what's the matter with you?
Nothing. Nothing's the matter with me. It's just that I want to tell you something. Harriet, you've got to change. You ought to try to be more like Miss Brooks.
Well, what do you mean, Walter?
If you want me to stay interested in you, you've got to be more alluring, youthful, glamorous, feminine in that real feline Brooks way.
Walter, have you been drinking pine needles, too?
Look at that tree. It seems to be glowing.
What do you mean, glowing? It's just the reflection from the streetlight. This party's giving me the memes. Holidays, indeed. Here, I'll just move the tree where it won't glisten in our eyes. Here we go.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas! Of course I'm Mr. Conklin. Happy-go-lucky, fun-loving, gag-a-minute Osgood.
Gag-a-minute Osgood?
Sometimes I've wanted to.
Miss Brooks, you suddenly look so different, so intelligent. Miss Brooks, I have made up my mind. You are now head of the Madison High English Department. Ha, 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 ha.
Well, thank you, fun-loving Osgood.
I'm going to put this wonderful tree where it belongs, right in the center of the room. Give me a hand, Boynton.
Yes, sir, Mr. Conklin. I'll just take this end here and... Miss Brooks?
Yes, Mr. Boynton?
Come here, baby.
What?
I said, come here, Connie.
You did not. You said, Come here, baby, and I'm here.
Look, he's taking her over to the mistletoe.
Oh, isn't it wonderful? What are you going to do, Mr. Boynton?
Just call me Phil, Connie. And this is what I'm going to do.
Wonderful, beautiful dream. Mr. Boynton, where are you? Where did everybody go? Oh, I must have been dreaming. Well, that's real enough. I'll be right there. Oh, sorry, Minerva. I didn't mean to drop you.
I'm cold.
Why, it's the Conklins and Walter and Mr. Boynton. But you all just left. I mean, come in.
We thought it would be nice if we spent our Christmas Eve together, Miss Brooks.
Yes, and we brought a few little gifts over for you.
Now, I'll just put them under this tree here.
Yes, do that, Walter.
Aren't you going to ask me why I didn't go upstate, Miss Brooks?
I know why, Mr. Boynton. Your folks are coming down to see you.
How did you know that? I just got the telegram.
Don't let's get too carried away with the holidays. We've got to prepare for a hard school season ahead, Miss Brooks.
Oh, let's not talk about school affairs now, Osgood.
Walter, look at the mistletoe.
Yeah, look at it.
Now, just a minute before we go through all that again. Would you please touch the tree, Mr. Boynton? The one on the left with the... Why, it's gone. There's only one tree.
Miss Brooks, are you all right?
Of course I'm all right. Could I have dreamt that part, too? Mr. Boynton, would you do me a favor, please?
Oh, of course, Miss Brooks. What is it?
Would you touch the Christmas tree?
Touch it?
Please, it's important.
Oh, all right. There.
Nothing happened.
What did you expect would happen?
A miracle. Excuse me, I'll be right back.
I'm a little urchin, and I'm selling magic Christmas trees.
But you just came here.
Please buy one, lady. They only cost 50 cents a piece.
50 cents?
That's right.
Here's $2. Give me 4 of them.
What a hilarious ending to another great Christmas story. Indeed, Miss Brooks has it bad for Mr. Boynton, and she's convinced that her Christmas tree is magic. You just heard Magic Christmas Tree from the classic comedy series Our Miss Brooks. The episode was first aired the evening of Sunday, December 19, 1948 on CBS and starred Eve Arden as Connie Brooks and Jeff Chandler as bashful biology teacher Philip Boynton. I thoroughly enjoy listening to episodes of Our Miss Brooks and I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Well, I hope you are enjoying this Christmas season as much as I am. Have you got your Christmas tree up yet? And if so, have you tested it to see if it's magical? Even if it's not, I'm sure it's beautiful, and hopefully your community neighborhood is all decked out for Christmas and is beautiful too. I'm afraid it's almost time to say goodbye. If you'd like to send me your thoughts on today's program, I encourage you to do so. My email address is Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at CFISFM.com, and my postal address is Old Part of the Radio, 2880 15th Avenue, Prince George, B.C., Canada, Victor 2 Mike, 1-Tango-1. From the CFIS studios in Prince George, I'm Corey Walker. Have a great week.